Today, almost 50 years later, Sledge still has nightmares about the bloody, muddy month of May on Okinawa, when the artillery fire from both sides was so heavy and unremitting that he had a constant headache. The Japanese were lodged so deeply in their caves that the American artillery hardly bothered them, and when it paused, they resumed their defense with rifles, grenades, mortars, and machine guns, firing at corpsmen and litter-bearers in purposeful contempt for Western civilities. The battlefield was soon scarred, cratered, and treeless, a mess of mud and water-filled holes and slippery ridges, looking like Verdun in the Great War. A week-long stay in a muddy hole on Half Moon Ridge near Shuri, the main Japanese point of resistance, almost drove Sledge insane. There he existed in an atmosphere of unburied, stinking Japanese and Marine corpses, maggots, flies, rain, dysentery, knee-deep mud, and the constant fear of death at any moment. "It was the most ghastly corner of hell I had ever witnessed," Sledge writes. Peleliu had been bad, but this was an environment so degrading I believed we had been flung into hell's own cesspool. To slip in the mud and fall was to have one's clothing filled with wriggling maggots from the rotting corpses, and if a Marine slipped and slid down the back slope of the muddy ridge, he was apt to reach the bottom vomiting. The war for Sledge and the others fighting in conditions like this was insanity, and some Marines went insane, reduced by the shelling to crying or mad shouting and screaming. Others were removed from the line suffering from malaria or pneumonia. Those with trench foot stayed put. The Japanese, finally driven out of their Shuri positions, withdrew further south to a last stand defense at Kunishi Ridge, where as usual they occupied deep caves, largely resistant to artillery, aerial bombing, and naval gunfire. Despite hopes for some respite, Sledge's company had to continue with its dreadful work, and sensing that his luck was running out, one can't expect to beat the terrible odds forever, Sledge was in a near panic. But he did not break. When his battalion finally reached the southern shore of the island, Company K was down to 50 men. The reduction of Okinawa had taken 82 days. PFC Eugene Sledge had lost 25 pounds, and on his hands and arms were open sores that would not heal for months. But a final indignity. His battalion had to now move north again, burying the blackened Japanese corpses and salvaging brass shell cases. American casualties on Okinawa came to almost 40,000. There were also more than 26,000 neuropsychiatric cases, men evacuated after psychological breakdowns. In addition to the destruction of the Japanese defenders, some 42,000 Okinawan civilians were killed. Knowing all too well what the forthcoming invasion of Japan would mean for them, Sledge and the lucky survivors in his outfit heard the news of the A-bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki with an indescribable sense of relief. They would live, even if shaken and illuminated, for a lifetime about the depth of human iniquity. Sledge's testimony about these almost incredible events is entirely credible because of his evident decency and his remoteness from any sort of disingenuousness, actual or literary. His way with both life and language is straight, without irony, hyperbole, or the desire to show off. If another writer asserted that in the shower he had seen a longtime member of the old breed, Gunnery Sergeant St. Elmo M. Haney, briskly scrubbing his genital organs with a GI brush, we might disbelieve. When Sledge tells us this, we know it is true. Veterans of front lines everywhere will applaud the accuracy with which Sledge registers the sights and sounds of combat. Authors and screenwriters are likely to assert that bullets whine. Sledge knows that they snap. It is artillery shells that whine, while mortar shells whisper faintly. Also remarkably accurate is Sledge's memory of physical details. he recalls exactly what it's like to hike with a heavy pack in a long column that frequently and inexplicably stops. If a man put down his load, he was sure to hear, "Pick up your gear, we're moving out." When the column paused, each man was faced with what Sledge calls, without irony, a big decision. The big decision in every man's mind at each pause in the column's forward progress was whether to drop his load and hope for a lengthy pause, or to stand there and support all the weight rather than putting it down and having to pick it up again right away.